Today is Monday, June 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Protests against police brutality continued this past weekend after a black man was killed when police tried to arrest him.
The police department has fired Rolf, the officer who allegedly shot and killed Brooks.
Plus, a court hands down a guilty verdict in a much-watched case in the Philippines.
We're at the precipice. If we fall over, we're no longer in democracy.
And why is North Korea choosing now to walk back commitments from 2018? We'll have those stories and more next. Police in the southern U.S. city of Atlanta, Georgia, released dramatic body camera and dash camera video of a police interaction between two officers and 27-year-old Rayshard Brooks. The officer shot him dead as he tried to escape arrest. Reuters' Yahaira Yaquez begins today's program.
He had about 1.5 drinks.
Atlanta police on Sunday released this video that showed the moments leading up to the fatal shooting of Rayshard Brooks, whose autopsy reportedly showed he was shot twice in the back. Footage from Officer Devin Brosnan's body cam shows him waking Brooks, who is asleep at the wheel of a car in a Wendy's drive-thru lane.
Hey, you're parked in the drive-thru right now. Hey, sir. You right?
Nothing whatsoever.
Once fellow officer Garrett Rolf arrives, the video showed the two officers questioning Brooks.
I just take a deep breath in.
And then performing a sobriety check.
I think you've had too much to drink to be driving.
The situation then quickly spun out of control. The video then showed Rolf attempting to put handcuffs on Brooks, who struggled with the two officers before breaking free and running across the parking lot. A second videotape from the restaurant surveillance cameras shows Brooks turning as he runs and possibly aiming a taser at the officers before one of them fires his gun and the 27-year-old falls to the ground. The police department has fired Rolf, the officer who allegedly shot and killed Brooks, while Brosnan was put on administrative leave. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution on Sunday reported that the Fulton County Medical Examiner's Office concluded that Brooks died from organ damage and blood loss from two gunshot wounds. The killing of Brooks and his encounter with the two white officers ignited fiery protests in Atlanta and prompted the city's police chief to resign. Meanwhile, authorities on Sunday announced a $10,000 reward to identify those responsible for setting fire to the Wendy's restaurant where the incident took place.
Yahaira Yaquez reports for Reuters News. Thousands of protesters gathered in Los Angeles, California, for an anti-racism demonstration Sunday. The protest and rally also gave black LGBTQ people the opportunity to speak out for justice and fair treatment. All Black Lives Matter was painted in a rainbow of colors along a stretch of Hollywood Boulevard as a statement of solidarity. People all over the world have been protesting against racism since George Floyd's death, a Memorial Day after a white Minneapolis, Minnesota police officer pressed a knee into his neck. Black Lives Matter protests have also attracted large crowds in Australia in defiance of government warnings about COVID-19. Phil Mercer reports on the marches this weekend that have been inspired by mass gatherings in the United States.
Across Australia, thousands of anti-racism demonstrators rallied against high rates of Indigenous incarceration, deaths in custody, and the removal of Indigenous children from their families. Aboriginal Australians make up about 3% of the population, but almost a third of prison inmates are Indigenous. This Aboriginal woman said she wanted justice for her people.
We're here to support, you know, our future as Indigenous people and to walk against the injustices of what happens to our people.
In Perth, Western Australia, they defied calls by the authorities Saturday not to attend because of COVID-19 fears. Organisers handed out masks and hand sanitizer. An earlier march in Sydney was ruled unlawful by the Supreme Court on public health grounds, but hundreds of people joined the protest.
I'm here because there's been 437 deaths in custody since 1991. So I'm here to make a stand and I don't care that the government has said this is illegal.
New South Wales Assistant Police Commissioner Mick Willing wasn't happy protesters had ignored coronavirus health orders.
It's disappointing to acknowledge that around 300 people chose to ignore the warnings that have been given by police in terms of coming to this public gathering.
There have been separate rallies in Australia by groups protesting the treatment of asylum seekers and refugees. The government had urged demonstrators to stay home because of concerns that mass gatherings could spread COVID-19, which has been mostly contained in Australia. Two women were arrested after a statue of the British explorer Captain James Cook was defaced in Sydney. Another was damaged in Perth. However, Peter Dutton, Australia's Home Affairs Minister, criticised calls to remove statues of European colonists in Australia as an obscure left-wing cause. This year has marked the 250th anniversary of Cook's voyage to Australia. British settlement would begin 17 years later. Historical monuments across the world have been torn down in recent weeks by anti-racism campaigners following the death of African-American man George Floyd in US police custody in Minneapolis last month. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
We have ongoing coverage of the global protests on our website. That address, voanews.com. A Manila Regional Trial Court branch convicted CEO Maria Ressa and former research writer Reynaldo Santos Jr. of the popular media outlet Rappler of cyber libel on Monday in a case seen as retaliation over articles critical of Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte. Ressa spoke after the verdict.
We're at the precipice. If we fall over, we're no longer a democracy. And in many ways, that could be easier for all of us, right? I've worked under Suharto in Indonesia, Deng Xiaoping in China. The rules are very clear. This kind of gray area where if you go too far, you know, you'll get slammed. Let's not play the game. Are we a democracy or not?
Human Rights Watch has called the decision a devastating blow to media freedom in the Philippines. And earlier today, I spoke with reporter Stanley Gahete, who was at the courthouse when the decision was handed down.
The court sentenced them between 6 months to 1 day and up to 6 years in jail over charges filed by businessman Wilfredo Keng, according to her news organization. They were also ordered to pay a total of $8,000 in damages. Both are entitled to post-conviction bail while they pursue appeals. According to Maria Ressa, she said that to all Filipinos, they need to protect their rights, and if they don't use their rights, they will lose them. The press freedom is for everyone and not only in journalism. The court said Rappler did not offer proof to verify allegations made against Keng in an article published on the site in May 2012 that linked him to illegal drugs and human trafficking. It also added that the freedom of the press cannot be used as a shield in this case. Rights groups warned that the verdict could have a chilling effect on the mass media in the country and silence critics of President Rodrigo Duterte. Rappler is known for its critical coverage of the Duterte administration, which took office in 2016. So far, Maria Ressa and her team, including Reynaldo Santos Jr., who wrote the story in 2012, will file for motion for reconsideration to the Regional Trial Court in Branch 46, or they will directly go to the Court of Appeals.
Stanley, you mentioned Maria Ressa's statements about how this decision affects press freedom in the Philippines. I've also mentioned Human Rights Watch's comments about the decision. And the Foreign Correspondents Club of Thailand has also come out in support of Rappler and Ressa. But I wonder if you can kind of speak to what Maria and Rappler have said about what their next steps are. What is the future of the news organization?
She just said she has the firsthand knowledge on the abuse of her rights, the violation of her rights. And she believes Rappler has been under attack for almost 4 years since Duterte, President Rodrigo Duterte, being in his position. And she thinks where she's going. The mission of Rappler, she believes, remains the same, and they will always carry out with far more, and it can't be far more because they were thrown everything already into this. And she believes this is a pivotal movement for the entire Philippines, for and a pivotal movement not just for the democracy but also for the idea of the free press. She's always defending that the attack was made because of the administration currently hitting her. But the court said that this is not all about the issue on press freedom. It's all about the cyber case. Is it all about the libel? The issue here is that the cyber law was implemented and was finalized months after the story about businessman Kang was published.
Stanley Gahete is a reporter living and working in the Philippines who was speaking to me via Skype from his home in Quezon City, just outside Manila. And coming up later...
Well, there does seem to be a lot going on. North Korea, and particularly Kim Jong-un's sister, seem to be picking a fight with both Seoul and Washington.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Popular science fiction movies like Interstellar or the classic 2001 A Space Odyssey portrays astronauts on incredibly long-distance missions, hibernating or being placed in suspended animation for most of their journeys. Two new and separate studies that address placing mice, a species that doesn't naturally hibernate, into a hibernation-like state suggest that science fiction may someday become science fact. One of the studies came from researchers at the Harvard Medical School and the other from Japan's University of Tsukuba and the Riken Center for Biosystems Dynamics Research. Each study details the identification of neurons in the brain that, when stimulated, put their mouse test subjects into a hibernation-like state for several days. When animals such as bears, snakes, or bees hibernate, their heart rate and breathing slows and their body temperature drops. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Johns Hopkins University has tracked nearly 8 million confirmed cases of COVID-19. Today, China moved swiftly to try to control a new outbreak of the coronavirus after 36 more cases were confirmed in Beijing. People were lined up at hospitals and other facilities around the capital as authorities rushed to administer thousands of tests to people who worked at a major wholesale market, anyone who had visited it in the last 2 weeks, or anyone who had come into contact with either group of individuals there. Authorities have also confirmed at least 79 cases of the coronavirus over 4 days in what looks to be the largest outbreak since China largely stopped the epidemic spread at home more than 2 months ago. The new outbreak appears to have started in the Xinfadi market, Beijing's largest wholesale food market. In Europe, many countries are reopening borders to each other after 3 months of coronavirus closures, restoring freedom of movement that was interrupted abruptly in March. Now, to get the details on what can and can't be done, I spoke with journalist Nicolas Pinot via WhatsApp in Paris.
Yeah, we can mention Belgium, Greece, or France, who lifted a restriction this Monday for traveling within the European borders. For France, for example, it also requires reciprocity. So France may impose restriction on other countries blocking travelers from France. But other than that, you have so many countries opening today. Also, Germany has ended land border checks on June 15. It's a big deal here in Europe because obviously you get the freedom of movement within the Schengen area. And for the past 3 months, everything has been paused, and the European countries had reestablished controls at borders because obviously they wanted sanitary measures to prevent the pandemic to spread within their countries. So you have a huge kind of relief. Like in France, for example, also restaurants, now they can open inside. And that's something, you know, for French people and for tourists, it's something also important.
Now, as I understand it, while a lot of the borders in the European Union are open to cross-border activity, that isn't being extended to everyone within the Schengen area. What kind of restrictions are still in place for members and residents of the EU?
Yeah, you're right. If we mention Spain also, who took a heavy hit during the pandemic. Spain will only lift a travel restriction on June 21st, for example, and its neighboring country, Portugal, will remain closed until July 1st. So you still have this consensus that we should, relax and ease the restriction, but some countries are still, being very cautious about reopening the borders within the European Union. And as a matter of fact, the borders, the external borders of the bloc are still closed. People mentioned the deadline July 1st to reopen them, and so far nothing has been confirmed.
Now, Nico, you mentioned tourism, and of course, one of the biggest populations of travelers are those from the United States and Asia. So what about travelers coming into the European Union from those two countries? Are they prohibited?
You're right. As of right now, these people, they have to wait. You mentioned tourists from the United States, but also Asia, Latin America, or the Middle East. They're going to have to wait for now. The EU Commissioner for Home Affairs, Ylva Johansson, she's really pushing to leave those restrictions by July 1st. But as of right now, they are still cautious because they don't want to have a second wave.
Really quickly now, what about folks coming over from Britain? Because up until the end of last year, Britain was part of the EU.
As of right now, the borders are open. But as you know, since June 8th, visitors from abroad are required to quarantine for 14 days within the UK. So countries such as France, they just established some measures, identical measures, to also impose quarantine from travelers coming from the UK.
Nicolas Pinault was a reporter living in Paris, France. Ports remain closed in Italy, but the end of lockdown measures and favorable weather conditions have authorities concerned that a new wave of immigrant arrivals is imminent. Sabina Castelfranco reports that intelligence sources have said more than 20,000 migrants are ready to depart from North Africa.
Arrivals of migrants on Italian shores never really stopped during the months of lockdown imposed because of COVID-19, but ports were closed as Italy declared them unsafe and NGO vessels stopped patrolling the Mediterranean because of the emergency. Nonetheless, according to the Italian Interior Ministry, more than 6,000 migrants have already reached Italy this year, compared to 2,000 for all of last year. Now, with the numbers of new coronavirus infections decreasing day by day and no longer a concern, fears are mounting that the number of migrants that will soon take to the seas for Italy from North Africa will increase dramatically. Good weather and calm seas during the summer will also make it easier for traffickers to make the crossings. Italian newspaper reports, quoting intelligence sources, say more than 20,000 migrants are preparing to leave from North Africa. Charity vessels have resumed patrolling the Mediterranean to try to provide assistance to migrants in difficulty. The Mare Ionio ship of the Italian NGO Mediterranea Saving Humans set sail this week from the Sicilian port of Trapani on its eighth mission. Mare Ionio's spokesperson said the vessel was headed to the central Mediterranean to monitor and denounce the terrible violations of human rights that continue to take place. She added that they know they will be encountering war refugees and victims of torture who are left to die at sea. In the latest tragedy at sea, the bodies of more than 60 dead African migrants were recovered this week after their vessel sank, after leaving from Tunisia headed to Italy. The United Nations Refugee Agency says that so far this year, the number of sea departures from Tunisia to Europe has increased fourfold. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
Global shares and U.S. stocks have skidded on concern over a resurgence of coronavirus cases and pessimism after Wall Street posted its worst week in nearly 3 months. Shares fell Monday in Paris, London, Tokyo, and Shanghai. Stocks turned wobbly as investors are reevaluating their expectations for economic growth, which many skeptics have been saying were overly optimistic. An American has been sentenced to 16 years in prison by a Russian court on spying charges. The Moscow City Court convicted Paul Whelan on charges of espionage and sentenced him to 16 years in a maximum security prison colony. Whelan has insisted on his innocence, saying that he was set up. The U.S. Embassy denounced Whelan's trial. The U.S. State Department said the United States is outraged by the decision of the Russian court after a secret trial with secret evidence and without appropriate allowances for defense witnesses. Whelan's brother David said lawyers will appeal the verdict he denounced as being political, adding in a statement that the court's decision merely completes the final piece of this broken judicial process. The UN's top rights body Monday agreed to a request from African countries to urgently debate racism and police brutality this week following unrest in the United States and beyond over George Floyd's death. It's only the fifth time in the Council's 14-year history that it has agreed to hold an urgent debate, which is a special debate agreed upon within a regular session of the Council. Burkina Faso's ambassador to the United Nations in Geneva last Friday sent the Council president a letter on behalf of Africa's 54 countries calling for an urgent debate on, quote, racially inspired human rights violations, police brutality against people of African descent, and the violence against the peaceful protests that call for these injustices to stop, end quote. North Korea issued a statement Saturday indicating it would take unspecified action against South Korea. It's the latest remark from Pyongyang that has seemingly walked back much of the goodwill and agreements it secured with Seoul in 2018. South Korean President Moon Jae-in urged the North on Monday to stop raising tensions or reverse the deals reached 2 years ago. Bruce Klinger is the Northeast Asia Fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and I spoke to him via Skype to find out why North Korea is changing tack now.
Well, there does seem to be a lot going on. North Korea, and particularly Kim Jong-un's sister, seem to be picking a fight with both Seoul and Washington. So on the Washington front, I think there are three trends going on. The first is that North Korea has sort of had a steadily deteriorating depiction of the personal relationship between Kim and Trump. Originally, it was glowing after the Singapore summit. Then it went to, yes, the relationship is wonderful, but that's separate from the bilateral relationship, which is not making any progress. Then it deteriorated to, well, it's a great relationship, but it's totally irrelevant. To now, it's why should we even bother maintaining this relationship? Another trend is that North Korea is mentioning the U.S. presidential election. They started late last year. I don't remember them doing that in the past. And it seems to be a bit like a Chicago gangster of nice reelection campaign you got there, Mr. Trump. Shame if something were to break. So Trump doesn't need a North Korea deal, but I think North Korea feels it has more leverage. And then the third trend is a continuation of a longstanding one of vowing to continue to augment and refine its nuclear and missile inventory.
You brought up Kim Yo-jong, Kim Jong-un's sister. And this past weekend, she said that it may become time for North Korea to take some sort of action against South Korea. And I wanted to get your reaction and your thoughts about her making such a statement, because we have seen her at the summits before, but she has been elevated to a new position, and wanted to get your take on the significance of her releasing such statements.
Well, some are speculating that it's related to Kim Jong-un's health, and that if she's really stepping up to the plate, it must be because behind the scenes there's growing concern about his health. And that's a possibility. Certainly, Kim's own children are far too young to be designated as successors. And Kim has, like his father and grandfather, have had extended periods of absence from the limelight. But when Kim did come back, he didn't seem frail. He didn't seem sick. He seemed vibrant, though still morbidly obese and not the picture of health. So he didn't seem to show signs of, you know, being on death's door. So it could be long-term planning, or it could just be that if she is chosen as the successor, at some point they do have to start burnishing her credentials, just like Kim Jong-un had to have his credentials burnished.
Bruce Klinger is a senior research fellow for Northeast Asia at the Heritage Foundation here in Washington. You've been listening to International Edition. on The Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. And until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and good night.